Hello, and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio. It is Friday, October 14th, 2016. Yet another day on the campaign trail and week, and we're extraordinarily excited to have Sarah Burse of RawStory.com again back with us to talk about this effing week.
Rachel, hi, Sarah.
Hi, guys. Here.
Hi.
And I'm sort of
hello.
And I'm just going to sort of turn it over to you guys. Do we want to talk about the debate since that's in our rear view at the second debate?
We can start there.
Go ahead then.
Well, that's not what I primarily want to talk about. So we can, but yeah. So I had to actually go back and listen to the last podcast to figure out what we had and had not covered. Mm-hmm. Because every day is like 2 weeks now, in terms of just shit happening. And so I went back and it was so quaint.
It was a simpler time.
It was a simpler time. And we thought the world had melted down. It was right before, like right as the tape had come out and that whole thing, and the debate had not yet happened. And so we haven't talked about the debate, so let's do that briefly. There was a debate on Sunday, and it was town hall style. And obviously, since the tape had just come out, Donald Trump was asked. That was the first question, I think, right?
Well, I was not able to watch this debate in real time.
Oh, that's right.
Because I had band practice.
Right.
And so I only saw bits and pieces, and I was sort of texting you for updates.
Right.
And
yeah. I watched it with
and,
Dana.
And sort of monitoring Twitter. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Twitter was like, oh, he's doing much better. He's kind of holding his
no,
own. And
no,
you were like,
no.
It's no, a horror
no,
show.
Right,
no.
Sarah? No, it was awful. It was awful. His response to the tape was, oh, well, you know, that's locker room banter and ISIS. Literally, yeah, go ahead.
Of course it's crazy. The thing that I am kind of in love with Anderson Cooper for saying is he repeated what Trump said, and then he sort of asked him, you understand that this is sexual assault, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah. Cooper just sort of just went there, and Trump was like, no, it's not.
Right.
No, it's not.
And you're like, no, it is.
And and he just sort of then explained why this was not about sexual assault. It was about the locker room banter, blah, 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 which has now been like all over punditry with both Republicans and Trump surrogates saying,
and we're going to talk about that
line.
Yeah, we're going to get way,
all over, like,
yeah,
vomiting.
way into that. But yeah, so I loved him too, Anderson Cooper, in that moment, like, you understand that's sexual assault, right? Like,
well, I will chime in here and say some interesting things happened politically this week. A lot happened in a short time. Like when the tape came out, the world kind of melted down and a lot of Republicans jumped ship, and Mike Pence went into hiding and was supposedly beside himself and like ready to quit or do God knows what. They were talking about replacing Trump on the ticket with Pence. And then what obviously happened was these reps' phones just blew up with crazy Trump supporters saying, you know, don't you dare back off, or I will not vote for you. And the damage might already be done there. But a lot of them didn't about face, and in for a penny, in for a pound, because after that, when all these women came forward and said, oh, no, yeah, he actually did all that, like nobody knew his jumping ship. Like everybody's holding toeing the line or trying to. And that's amazing. Like these people are soulless.
Oh, yeah. And like we're going to talk about all of those women in a minute. But yeah, it has been like we thought last week was crazy and that tape was crazy. But like this week's even like it just keeps jumping the
holy
shark. And I just
assault Batman.
No, this is like this is going to be like the rape podcast. Like this is just going to be the sexual assault, sexual harassment, content warning podcast, because that's all that it's been this entire week. Like it's nuts. Including at the debate, getting back to that. Not that there was a sexual assault at the debate, but
hopefully not.
This sort of meme started floating around the internet of Donald Trump standing behind Hillary Clinton. So it's a town hall so they can sort of wander around. And she would be addressing someone's question and speaking to that person sort of directly. And he would be wandering around behind her, standing in this kind of intimidating pose behind her. And people got some screenshots and these memes started to pop up and they resonated with me for sure. Like, he maybe didn't do it on purpose, but he did it knowingly, if that makes sense. Like, that's just the way he is around women that he finds intimidating or that are challenging him. And so I don't think he thought to himself, like, I'm going to go stand behind her and make her feel uncomfortable. But that was his instinct to do so. Right.
Yeah. And the memes that were popping up were things like they were all related to horror movies.
Right.
So to put this in context, what he was doing is something that people universally see in our culture as being scary.
Yeah, I thought of Michael Myers.
Yes.
Right. There was a scary clown one. There was the Scream mask. There was like Hellraiser. There was everything that you could think of. There were people
The monsters
tweeting
right
it
behind you. Yeah.
I think I tweeted it saying something like, the call is coming from inside the house. You know?
Right. Someone else tweeted something like, just to be clear to all of you gentlemen out there, this is the moment in a parking garage where we get twitchy and get our keys out. Like, that's that feeling. And I had that feeling watching it. I was like, what is he doing? Like, back the fuck off, dude. Like, I was uncomfortable watching him do that to her. And she seemed very unfazed. But, yeah.
And she talked about it a little bit on Ellen whenever they were. In a couple of interviews, she's talked about how she could kind of feel him behind her, but, you know, just was let him do his thing. And, you know, kudos for not like, I'm remembering, it was the George Bush, debate with,
was it Gore when Gore went right up to him?
Yes. When Gore was like stepping up because it was about to be his turn to answer the question. Cause he like, I think the way it was like they had a little clock that counted down for each piece and Bush had gone past his time. And so Gore stood up and then began to step up to give his thing. And when he did, he stepped a little too close to Bush and Bush kind of like saw him out of the corner of his eye and did a double take and was like, hello.
Oh
yeah. I think he winked or something.
I don't remember that, but okay. That's interesting.
But it was very
awkward.
Yeah, it was just an awkward sort of moment. It wasn't like this predator thing of like somebody looming behind you.
Which he was.
In every single shot.
Yeah. Like he looked scary. And he had the physical presence of a person who is doing that. That's their intent. Right?
Well, He's a big damn dude too. I mean, he's a fat bastard.
Right. With tiny baby hands.
And she's relatively petite. Like she's kind of like my mom's size. She's kind of
like
short.
5'4", I think. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She's like my height. Yeah. Anyway. So that was kind of the big like internet meme of the debate. Otherwise, I thought he mostly sounded completely incoherent. Mm-hmm. There was some kind of, I don't know, story that was like, based on Trump's responses, guess what the question was?
Yeah.
And like, there's no way to do that because nothing he said made any goddamn sense. And nothing he said was related to the question asked. And there were also some funny audience reactions because the whole point of this was, for any of you who didn't watch it, was undecided voters at a town hall get to ask these candidates questions.
Can anybody's actually undecided at this point? Not only because of the contrast between like these two candidates, but just the fucking campaign has been going on for 2 years. What does it take?
I don't know.
Undecided. They're not really undecided. Even the guy on Lawrence O'Donnell tonight was like, well, I had actually made up my mind before the debate. I'm like,
I was a former Sanders supporter, but I didn't like Hillary, but obviously I'm not voting for Trump. He was the like angry black guy in the picture that's looking at Trump like, what the fuck you just say?
Yes, I love that. guy.
Yeah.
That guy was my Patronus charm.
Me too. And he was just on Lawrence O'Donnell and he was very nervous, but he was very charming and was just like, no, I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
Of course I made up my mind before the debate. I'm not crazy.
And then there's the woman who was like looking at him like, what'd you just say? when he said something about her being evil or something. And then of course there's, what is his name? Ken Bone. Ken Bone with the red sweater. Yes. That's going to be the Halloween costume, I predict, this year. But I remember watching the debate and thinking, like, I sort of hate undecided voters. Because one of them asked the two of them to say something nice about each other.
Yeah, and the last question.
What a waste of a question.
Right?
It's a waste of a question for the two people who are vying to be your president.
It's like when your grandma sits you and your sibling down because you've been fighting.
It's like at Thanksgiving like, when they're like,
nice about each other.
Everyone go around the table and say something you're thankful for. And you're like, I'm fucking hungry. And there's turkey right in front of me. Like, I'm done with this fucking exercise,
our
Grandma.
Our Thanksgiving this year, God only knows.
Oh, my God. No joke. Our Thanksgiving this year is going to be a nightmare. But I thought the responses were really funny. Hillary was like, well, his children are pretty great.
Yeah, which is not true, by the way.
No, it's bullshit.
His children are fucking nightmares.
His male children are garbage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, yeah, she's basically great. Like, he like complimented her three times in one sentence. He was like, well, she is just basically like, yeah, she's pretty great. And I was like, all right. So,
well, didn't he also say she's a fighter and never gives up?
Yeah, she's a fighter.
When
she never gives up.
His whole pitch is that she doesn't have the stamina. And...
Right.
Exactly. That was the most interesting thing. I think he had an opportunity to do kind of what she did and be like, you know, everything that she is deplorable. Thus, I'm going to compliment her on the fact that, you know, she raised a daughter who's amazing and has dedicated her life to helping women and children abroad.
No,
right?
He really did compliment her and be like, she never quits. She never gives up.
And like, he was basically
was like
at the end was like, she's pretty great. And you're like, all right, I agree. Like, yeah.
I think too, one of the things that really struck me, is I wonder if the reason he notices that, and this could be complete conjecture and just me pulling something out of my ass, but it seemed to me like one of the reasons that he may have noticed that about her is that he is more accustomed to women backing down, or he's not used to powerful women who come at him and who don't stop fighting against him.
Right, yeah, which is why he was so mad after the last debate and melted down about Alicia Machado.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this one, maybe you're right. Maybe he was like, well, I mean, she's a fighter. I can give her that. Like, she didn't back down and she keeps hitting me. Like, I hate her, but at least she's got that. I think that's a good conjecture. I like it.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah. All right. So I want to move on from the debate unless anyone has anything else to say about it.
No.
Okay. So I will say this. Bill Maher was just talking about Ken Bone and he was like, how the hell did the debate come out to like Ken Bone being such a big deal? And I honestly think that the reason Ken Bone became a big internet sensation is because that debate was so like such a hellish nightmare.
Yeah.
That people needed some kind of comic relief. And finally they had Ken Bone to grab onto and be like, chubby red sweater guy with a big mustache. Thank you.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. Because I wasn't particularly taken with him. I was like, that's a pretty softball energy question. Like, all right, whatever. Undecided voter. They're the worst. And then the internet kind of blew up and I was like, oh, but it is. He's like cute and nice. He seems nice.
And his last name is Bone.
His name is Ken Bone. And he wore a giant red sweater. And then it came out later that he wore that sweater because he had torn his pants earlier. And so he needed to cover them up. And that's like even more adorable, mm-hmm. you know, like that's extra adorable. So, yeah. Anyway.
Plus he confessed that he was leaning Donald Trump. Until Trump until that debate, and then he basically said, "I'm supporting Clinton." So
nice.
All right, welcome to the party, Ken. Ken.
Right,
good so for let's you, kinda... Mr. Bone.
Come to our election night watch party.
let's not criticize him for arriving late, but embrace that he showed up at all.
Yeah, exactly. No, absolutely.
Right? Love it.
We'll take any, you know, whoever's in our corner.
So I want to talk about the collective trauma that I think women are experiencing this week with these reports that are coming out from all of these women who are saying there was the video, and they're coming out and saying, yes, no, that he did that to me. In part because Anderson Cooper asked him at the debate on Sunday, so you said that it's locker room talk, fine. Have you ever done any of that? And he was like, categorically, no, like I've never done any of those things. And then we've just had report after report after report, like we're at over a dozen now of women that have come out and said, at such and such time, he did this, he did that. And I feel, and this entire week has been sort of emotionally exhausting to get through. And I don't think I realized it until I was brought into this Twitter conversation with a Huffington Post journalist. And she said, does anyone feel physically exhausted by this?
I think she said physically ill.
Physically ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I do. Mm-hmm. Physically ill, fatigued, anxious, triggered, like all of the things.
Yeah, she
anxious
got
and uncomfortable.
Anxious and uncomfortable. Yeah,
felt.
Like just I'm at this breaking point, really. And so I started to sort of examine that and think about, you know, there was that Twitter request from Kelly Oxford after the tape came out, and she asked women to tweet her their first sexual assaults, and she got like a million people to respond either to her or to the hashtag not okay. And I was thinking to myself, like, when this was happening, and I wasn't reading them because I can't take anymore, but I was thinking about, like, what would I even tweet her? I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what it would be. Maybe I don't have one. Is that weird? Like, I don't even know. And then these women started to come forward and say things like, oh, he pushed me up against a wall and kissed me, or, oh, he walked in my dressing room, or, oh, and I was like, oh, that's happened to me. Oh, that's happened to me. Oh, that? Is that what we're talking? Oh. And like, this sort of sense of like, it's been happening to me my whole life so frequently and so often that I don't even recognize it as what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And this sort of sense of like, I don't even, it's not dread, but it's like this heavy feeling that it's just sort of like, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it, but all these things start coming back and you're like, oh yeah, that was fucked up. Oh yeah, that shouldn't have happened. And right now I should probably count that in my list of things now. And like, it just became this like onslaught of like, ah, fuck. Like, you know, like I didn't have anything. And then all of a sudden I had 100 things. And I think I'm tired and I feel anxious and I just am like, I don't know. I don't know how to process it all this week. And I get the feeling that a lot of women are having this, like, this sense of, like, collective trauma about this man running for president who is doing things that have happened to all of us. And I don't know.
In a sense, he's like the sum of all the day-to-day fears that you have as a woman.
Or experiences,
experiences.
Right.
And he's running for fucking president.
Right.
And that, for me, culminates in the whole looming over her thing. Like, I've never really been in a situation where that I remember, because I feel like I've repressed pretty much anything that has happened to me before I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
But I've never really been in a position where somebody grabbed me like that. But I have this, I've always felt like it's a completely irrational fear. That at some point I will be sexually assaulted. I just assume that it's going to happen.
Right.
And I am in, every time I walk outside and there are not people around, you know, every time I walk outside in a parking garage, especially if I, don't have my back against a wall or I don't, like, I have to be able to see everything around me, I just have this huge anxiety about it. And, you know, being in dark places, being, seeing people that I don't know who are bigger than me, because I'm really tall,
right,
and I'm, and I have big shoulders and I'm strong. And when I see people that are men that are bigger than me, I get really, really anxious and scared.
Yeah.
And, I just assume that it's going to happen. And it never occurred to me that that was something that I shouldn't have. I mean, which is so strange to me to realize that, be like, yes, no, that's not how the world is. And it shouldn't be.
That's not how everybody lives. Like, that is how you and I live every day of our lives walking in the world. But that is not how everyone that is in the world functions. And it's a very strange thing to realize.
Yeah. I can't relate to it personally.
It's so interesting. Like, when you and I were in Florida, Travis, I watched you walk around in the world in a way that I have never experienced in my life. You walked around in the world with all of these people around and just sort of like did your thing.
I'm hardly a physically imposing man.
Right. But like, you didn't really notice a lot, and you weren't really like, you were just doing what we were doing. You had like a task and you were going to do that. And I am in a constant state of anxiety. I'm in a constant state of like, what's that person? Who's that? What are they saying? What are they doing? Is that guy dangerous? Like, in a constant state of looking around myself and my person, looking at the people that are around me, and determining in a split second whether those people are threats or not threats or what's right. going on. Right.
Right.
And you walk around in the world in a very different way. And I'm very envious of it because it is very just like, I don't know, like it's a sort of definition of male privilege, and I don't hold it against you. Right. Like, mm-hmm. I love that you get to do that, but it is very strange to witness. Yeah. It is for me. It is very strange. And I'm with you also, Sarah, like, I'm a smaller person. I'm like 5'4 and 5'3 maybe. And I'm a small person. So everybody's bigger than me pretty much. So most of the time that I walk around in the world, everybody that's around me is bigger than me and probably could, you know, harm me. So it's like a constant state of like, who's that? What are they doing? Are they looking at me? Are they coming near to me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a constant state of wondering.
And this is not born out of nothing. I mean, you have these experiences.
I do. And I have never been, I always say I've never been sexually assaulted. And I mean that by the traditional sense of like, I've never been like raped, right? But then you like hear all these stories and you're like, oh yeah, that dude totally put his hand up my skirt one time and like totally had my ass grabbed. And yes, men kiss me on airplanes and like shit happens to me that I guess could be assault, but I don't think of it in that way. Do you know?
Mm-hmm. The woman who was at the club in New York in the 90s that said that Trump put his hand up her skirt and she was talking about how she never thought of that as sexual assault, because when she thinks of assault, she thinks of violence and someone being like hitting somebody.
Right.
That was what she told Anderson Cooper tonight. And so I think the way that women have been conditioned to think of assault is more like battery, you know,
right.
Actual, you know, physical punching, hitting, striking, shooting, stabbing, something like that, rather than a physical violation or intrusion.
Right.
And I don't know. I wonder.
Well, the funny thing about that is, if a friend of mine told me any number of the stories that I have, I would immediately identify it as sexual assault. Immediately. I would be like, oh my God, like, he assaulted you. That's not okay. That's totally not okay. But there's something about the way that women are socialized that we justify it, or we push it away, or we shove it down the memory hole. And it just is a thing that doesn't matter or need, you know what I mean? But hearing someone else say something about it would make my blood boil.
On that subject of that and blood boiling, should we get into our friend AJ Delgado?
Yeah, we should.
I can't stand this woman. I'm sorry.
God.
She is soulless.
Yeah, I wrote about her this evening.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because just the fact that she spent so much time explaining why the Bill Cosby accusers came out later on and sort of excused all of these things and urged sensitivity and was very supportive. And yet when the Trump supporters come out, she is like a complete flip.
Yeah, no, she's literally using her same arguments, reversing them.
Well, I have a lot to say about this. I was incredibly angry because what she said was, any reasonable woman, would have come out immediately after an assault or harassment and come forward. And I knew for fucking sure, before I knew that she ever said that about Bill Cosby, I was like, you know that's not true. Like, you're a female living in this world. Like, you know that's not true. But then you break it down and you're like, all right, let's talk about what reasonable is. And I actually looked it up because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't being a crazy person. But, like, the dictionary definition of reasonable is of a person having sound judgment, fair, and sensible. All right. So if you're a woman in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, or up to now, and Donald Trump sexually assaults or sexually harasses you, tell me all about how you use your sound judgment to decide that you should come out publicly and tell people that he did that, right? This supposed billionaire celebrity hurt you, this tiny woman, and that does what for you? How does that make how is that reasonable, right? Uh-huh. It's not. Reason says shut your fucking mouth and don't say anything and get as far away from him as you possibly can and move on with your life, because that's found in, you know, sane judgment. That's what you do to self-protect. To come out and come forward with these accusations is not about reason. It's not about anything other than, I think, bravery. And I think camaraderie, like there's a sense of, okay, I finally know it wasn't just me. It's not something that I made up, or it's not something that, you know, someone gaslighted me and I didn't believe it happened, or, you know, a million things that these women have said.
I think his debate response may have triggered some I do too. Women too, to say, oh, that's a bridge too far. Like, it's one thing if he sort of exposed himself in that video of saying he does these things and then to just deny it. I think maybe woke a lot of people up, and these women who have been victimized and said, and these are just the ones that have come out in the last 5 days. I mean, can you imagine how many there are?
And how many women are terrified? You know, they're too scared to, or they sign non-disclosure agreements, or
because a lot of these women were either employed or were going to be employed, or you know, had some connection with Trump like that.
And he brags about his stupid non-disclosure agreements. Yep. I mean, it's the reason we don't have all of the Apprentice tapes right now.
Right. This, I guess my point is, like, we're going to hear this over and over. Some version of this idea that these women are to be discredited, that these women are unreliable and shouldn't be believed because they're just now coming out. And that is fundamentally untrue. Like, that is a myth that I would like to get rid of in this topic of sexual harassment and sexual assault, particularly when it has something to do with a celebrity. Like, even someone this week was like, used the Cosby argument and was like, oh, these all sound really similar. They must be copycats. And my fucking head wants to explode. I'm like, no, they're similar because that's his goddamn MO. That's what he does. That's why it sounds similar. It's not because they're copycatting each other. It's because that's what he fucking does.
Yeah, like do you ever hear any like serial rapists where like every time was different?
It's not every time is different. Every time is exactly the goddamn same. That's how you catch the guy.
David Johnson, how do we catch this guy? He rapes in a different way every time.
Well, then why
do you think it's the same guy?
Right. Look,
I don't know. I just have a feeling.
It's just maddening. And the other thing I want to say about that is like, to recognize how difficult it is for these women to come forward. This whole argument about like, oh, they just want publicity, right? They just want to be famous for
yeah,
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No one. No woman that I have ever known or probably exists wants the kind of publicity that this gets them.
This is something I can sort of relate to a little bit, because I can put myself in that headspace at least to say, to agree with completely what you're saying and be like, you're going to come out and talk about how you were violated
mm-hmm.
on national TV for publicity?
Mm-hmm. And
this
then
is an
have
American fucking idol.
Everything you've ever done in your life, everything you've ever regretted, everything that's questionable, everything.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Everything about your life is going to be exposed to the entire world.
I'm not even talking about that aftermath though. I mean the actual physical moment, and you saw it with the lady tonight with Gloria Allred physically shaking and
yeah.
unable to speak and read
right.
her own words because she was so distraught. Like, there is a lot of shame and humiliation that goes mm-hmm. along with that, and you're expressing it to the world. I mean, how can anybody in their right mind say they're doing this for publicity?
Oh, maybe they want to write a book and maybe they want to have a show, and you're exactly right. But the aftermath is harder, I think.
Absolutely.
Then it becomes, you know, everything you did when you were 16 and that ex-boyfriend who really hates you and that time you got drunk at a party and sucked some dude's dick in the bathroom and like everything you've ever done in your life
mm-hmm.
is now in the public.
Yeah.
And the man who hurt you is not on trial. You are.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like, we talked about this last week. This is the only crime in which the victim has to prove that they didn't consent to being victimized.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. It's the same. Like, nobody's like, oh, he stole my car. And the cop's like, are you sure you didn't just give it to him? Are you sure you didn't just were you drunk? Did you dress slutty and gave him, like, it's the only crime that a victim yeah. has to prove that they did not consent to it. And so the victim is the person who goes on trial. You have to prove that you're not a slut, essentially.
It's been interesting to see that. I mean, just tonight, watching the pundits on CNN, you know, see, it's not a partisan divide anymore. It is very, and it's not even like necessarily women against men. It is white male Republicans against women and Democrats who, and I saw it was Jack Kingston and Andre Bauer who were fighting back against all of the Democratic panelists. And then Amanda Carpenter, who was Ted Cruz's
right.
Communications director. Yeah. And she was just like, fuck you, motherfucker. she was absolutely furious with Kingston and Bauer trying to be dismissive that, you know, trying to use the locker room talk conversation. And she was just like, he was at fucking work.
Right.
You know, he had a mic on. He was doing a television interview. He was not in a locker room. So explain right. to me how, if you're not even in a locker room, how this is still locker room talk. Like, that's not even a rational argument to begin with, but it's even more irrational knowing that you are on television. There are cameras. There's an interviewer with you. There's a bus full of people. You have a microphone on.
And you're at work. And by this point, he knew what, once he got wired, he knew it was on, right?
Yeah.
There's no way he didn't know.
We made that point last week. He knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
He just didn't give a shit because he is above the law. He is above, you know, everything because he's Donald Trump, and that's who.
I'm sure he didn't
figure back then he was going to run for president, but you know,
and
when
think,
he decided to, he said, "Ah, fuck it."
He was, I think, yeah. he probably didn't remember when he decided to run for president, but I think at the time he was like, "Oh, like
no, I disagree.
I don't
that.
Care."
All the times he was on Stern, and all the times.
No, what I'm saying is, like, I think he was like, "I don't give a shit if this is on tape because it makes me sound cool." Right. It makes me sound like a fucking macho badass, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Which his ardent supporters eat up.
And his sons have reiterated too. It's like I think it was Donald Trump Jr. who said this is something that alpha males say.
Yeah.
Alpha personalities, which is literally straight up from the MRA handbook.
Uh-huh.
Alphas do this, betas do this, cucks do this, right? Like, he's just using language straight from the alt-right and the MRA handbook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, excusing this behavior because it's a couple of alphas hanging out, and you're like, what the fuck? Like,
that's what the campaign is.
They are so far up Steve Bannon's ass right now. Oh my God. It's absurd.
And one more thing I want to get to while we're on this topic, and Trav, I want you to speak to this because this is something that really surprises me. Women are really, really outraged about this and a little traumatized and very, like, understandably exasperated. But what I don't understand is why there are not more men that are super pissed, and not because of wives and daughters, and we'll get to that after the break, but because when people make this argument that boys will be boys, this is locker room talk, don't think another thing of it, what they're saying about all of the decent men in the world who do not speak this way about women, and none of the men in my life speak this way about women, not in private, not in public, not with each other,
not our fathers who are Republicans.
Not even my father, who's a Republican, would speak this way about women. Why are they not offended that these men are saying all men do this? This is what men do.
Greg Dworkin asked me the same question, and I said there's three answers. A, blind tribalism, right, left, Republican, Democrat, whatever, nothing else matters. B, Hillary derangement syndrome, like your dad. Yeah. No matter what Trump says, Hillary is the devil, and I don't want to hear about this anymore because Hillary's so bad and nobody talks about that. So I'm going to plug my ears and say la, 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 la.
But why are men not coming out and saying, wait a minute, don't lump me in with him? That's not how I speak to my male friends. That is not how men that I know speak to each other.
Not enough for me.
No, I
agree. But
even if you're a Trump supporter or you don't like Hillary, I feel like men should be more pissed about how they're being characterized by his campaign.
Well, sure. Men who are not Trump supporters and are voting for Hillary, I think, you know, you can pretty much rest assured that the vast majority of them already feel that way. And the one that how to explain is that the Republicans or Trump supporters that are so-called moderate and just excuse this shit or turn a blind eye to it. And like in the case of, you know, somebody we know, they literally say, I don't want to hear it because Hillary is so evil.
You know, I think too, the other thing that I've noticed is the athletes that have come out. And that I love, male athletes coming out saying, actually, no, we don't talk about this in the locker room.
Yes.
As a professional athlete, even coaches who've coached high school, who've coached college, being like, no, this is not acceptable behavior. This is not acceptable conversation in a locker room. And if somebody did say this, not only would we all be horrified, but it would be unacceptable.
But, you know, a lot of them may say that, but a lot of them are still going to support Trump. They did a poll, Sarah, I don't know if you saw this, a random poll of 44 NFL players.
Oh, God.
22 were Trump supporters. 20 or 21 said Clinton. 22 all white. 21 all African American. So
God,
there's that. And when you look overall at the polling, even the polling that's been very good for Hillary the last few days, Trump is still winning men by a pretty sizable margin.
Well, and let's get into that really quick before this break happens. There was this, I think it was 538 did this thing that said, here's what happened if only women voted and only men voted. And then there started this hashtag among Trump supporters that was hashtag repeal the 19th, which is the 19th Amendment, which is the amendment that allowed women the right to vote. And so they were literally like, my opinion, and I have no idea how it actually started, but my sort of speculation was like, oh God, somebody was trolling them. Like, oh, let's see if they do this. This will be so funny. And then they were like, that's a great idea. actually, no, let's do that. Fuck them. Let's repeal it and then we'll win. Like, I think it started as a joke by someone on the left and it was taken seriously by the crazy people on Trump's campaign or his supporters.
Or the MRAs.
The MRAs for sure. Because
well,
you know,
some women got into it, which is crazy to me.
God.
Like, yeah.
Internalized misogyny is not fun.
No, I believe it. Yeah.
But yeah, like that actually happened this week. There was a hashtag repeal the 19th, which was regularly used by Trump supporters to suggest that women should not vote in this election because if we didn't vote, then Trump would win by a landslide.
Right. And wasn't it Eric Trump that took that map and said, we're gaining momentum?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
like, what the fuck does that mean?
Before repeal the 19th, he did. And then like that got out to the crazy
people. You know, part of me, Sarah, especially because I monitor social media a lot and things are getting really, really stupid. And especially with the WikiLeaks stuff. We'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. But with the Trump campaign and his closest surrogates, it's almost become like a contest. Like, how stupid can we get and our supporters will just eat it up and repeat it? Like, I mean, we are like well past the idiocracy with a lot of the shit that I've been seeing in this election cycle. And I know that Facebook and Twitter had all kinds of inane, dumb shit in 2012 and unskewed polls and conspiracy theories and birtherism. Like, but I feel like we've ratcheted up even another level.
Yeah, I mean, what's crazy is when I started seeing the 19th Amendment stuff, but I assumed it was a joke. I really did think that this was just like somebody being serious way before the I looked at it and was like, oh God. It made me want to start a fake Twitter account to come up with like completely irrational right wing thing. Like, it made me kind of want to become a troll a little bit, and then I realized I would probably be really uncomfortable with myself after a while.
but nothing is sacred. Like, nothing is too far for these people to glom onto and believe. Like, somebody, and it was obviously somebody like me, circulated a thing that said Clinton Foundation payment schedule, and it had like Bill Ayers and Tony Rezko and the Black Panthers and Acorn, which doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And like, sure enough, actual Trumpkins like retweeted it like it was something
like
real.
It's fact. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, did
I'm
you
like,
see?
How do
look.
You dress yourself in the morning?
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, how are you allowed in the world? And it's like, yeah, people are that stupid.
Yeah,
they are. You could really troll these people by coming up with the most completely irrational, insane conspiracy theories, and they would not only believe it, they would just eat it up like they were starving.
Well, and it's fact now. It doesn't need to have any evidence supporting it. Someone said it on Twitter and it is fact, and I'm going I will die on that hill of that thing I saw some guy say. I don't know. Like, I do feel that's repeal
the
19th Amendment. The 19th Amendment, though, that for me was like, oh no, that's one of those. Like, that had to be started by somebody that was like, this will be really funny. They're going to eat it up. But then they actually did. And it's like, I don't know how much lower we can go, but I'm sure there's no bottom.
Well, we're going to find out because in the second half, I think Trump's just going to get crazier and crazier and crazier. And I think his supporters are going to get crazier and crazier and crazier. And I actually think it's going to get a little scary over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in the second half. So stick with us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. Sarah Burris of RawStory.com has been kind enough to join us and stick with us, even though it's getting pretty damn late over on the East Coast.
It's all good. I had a lot of Thai tea this afternoon, so
awesome.
I am wired for sound.
Amazing.
Well, we got a little heavy in the first half, and we may do that again.
Unfortunately, we are going to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess we don't really have a choice.
So during the break, I got this thing from a friend of mine, and I'm going to read it. It's a story about what we've been talking about. So here's what it says. A couple of years ago, I got called for jury duty and made it through a couple of rounds of dismissals before the remaining candidates were led into a room to meet the judge and defense attorney. It was an assault case. A drunk man had assaulted a woman friend of his outside of a nightclub. There were 30 potential jurors in the room. 12 were women. The first question the defense attorney asked of the women in the room was, "Have you ever been assaulted by a man?" All 12 women in the room said yes, and were asked to publicly describe the abuse, right there in front of everyone. All 12 women were dismissed from the pool of potential jurors. Not a single woman was eligible to be on that jury. We could not be deemed impartial because of each woman's individual history of being abused by men. I think about that case a lot, and I wonder if any of the men were asked if they had ever assaulted anyone. And more I see that what a jury of peers really means in this society, abusive men excusing the behavior of other abusive men. So, thoughts?
Well, if it's true, and we have no way of verifying it, it does sound plausible, doesn't it?
It does. So, it's one of those, like, who knows if it's true, but it rings so true because of because of rape culture, right? And patriarchy and everything that we've been through and live through and do every day.
You know,
well, I think too, just the questions that you like, if for anybody who's ever been on done jury duty, when you get to the point where you're sitting there and they're asking you questions, and the way that they dismiss you, it's pretty, that sounds incredibly plausible, because that would be a question that they would ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, that does fit, right?
Absolutely. So in what I understand to be how this works is both the defense and the prosecution have the opportunity to dismiss a certain number of jurors based on two different things. One is they don't have to provide an explanation, just like get rid of that person.
Right.
And the other is some explanation of like bias or something else. So it's very plausible that the defense attorney was able to to get rid of those 12 women based on the fact that he felt that they were biased and or not provide an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that would absolutely qualify. It would fall under the example of bias.
But why?
I think it's the same if somebody was asking, you know, if you were in a deciding a case about murder and you had somebody in your life that was murdered.
Yeah.
I think that would fall under bias too.
But then so you go to a place like, you know, Chicago, and you go into a place where it is in some areas kind of a war zone, and let's assume that you go to trial, even though like 90% of cases don't ever see trial, people plea out. So are you going to disclude everyone in that community from being a juror because almost all of them have known someone to have been murdered? Like,
so,
what we're doing is we're excluding people that have bias, yes, but also people in.
But in this case, the defense was given the latitude to excuse every single juror. Doesn't the prosecution get to choose jurors too?
Absolutely. So there were 30. They needed 12. So the prosecution, yeah, so I don't know. They each get to.
Too,
go ahead.
I think, too, you see this a lot with juries who, when they're trying to find juries and you end up with all white juries deciding for an African-American defendant.
Yeah.
Because
right.
you have bias in those cases. And it's this just weird fucked up thing about our judicial system. And I can't decide if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because at the same time, people really are innocent until proven guilty. And I think it's important for a defendant to have you know, a valid shot to prove his or her innocence. And if it was...
No, so hold on. I'm going to stop you there. That's not their job. Their job is to sit there and be presumed innocent. It's the prosecution's job to prove that that person committed that crime beyond a reasonable doubt.
But I mean, from the jury's perspective.
Right, but that's the problem, right? Like, that is fundamentally what is wrong, is that people walk in and go, what did this guy do? And what they should be doing is walking in and saying, what did the cops do? How are they going to prove to me that this guy is innocent?
Right.
And I think that presumption of innocence is very different based on your race and your class and your gender and your age and all of those things.
But I think that there is a presumption that if anybody who is either who can in somehow relate to this person, this defendant, I think automatically they're either the prosecution is going to say no, or if somebody, you know, can relate to the victim or the survivor in this case, then the defense is going to say no.
Yep.
Well, we got a little off track here, but I want to raise a larger point about this stuff. Let's introduce our best hypothetical scenario. Obviously, A, Trump loses. B, he's disgraced. Like, he loses a lot of his business holdings. And remember, he's going on trial for about 800 lawsuits, not to mention child rape after this. And, you know, these women may sue. And let's say hopefully he loses and he's disgraced. Can we say something good might come out of this, in that now women maybe start to identify these things that have happened to them that they've pushed aside or not considered assault or just didn't think about or didn't want to tell anybody about? Now maybe they do say, oh, wait, you know what? No, that was wrong. And that is bullshit. And I do need to talk about it.
I can say that has happened for me. Like I said before, when we were talking about this earlier, like, I have looked at these women coming forward and saying these things and going, oh, my God, that's so awful. Oh, wait, no, I have a thing just like that. There was an example of and I want to talk about this really specifically for two reasons. One is, let me just tell you first. So in case anyone hasn't heard, because the news is so overwhelming right now with shit Trump has done. There was a Howard Stern interview that he did in which he talked about how it was his privilege to be able to walk into the dressing room of the Miss America and Miss Teen USA and Miss Universe contestants while they were dressing and changing. And that he knew sort of when those different changing times would be, like sort of costume changes. And so he would walk into the dressing room while these women were changing so that he could see them naked. And that story really struck a chord with me. The first thing I want to say about that is about something that seems unrelated, but it's about the trans bathroom issue. So Dana brought this up and I thought it was really profound. And he said, anybody who was for these bathroom bills that disallow trans people from using the bathroom that relates to the gender that they associate with because they're afraid of a man walking in and watching their daughter do something and is not immediately disavowing Trump for literally not, maybe it could happen, but bragging about actually walking in on 15-year-old girls getting dressed can go fuck themselves. Because what we're talking about is this esoteric possibility of a man in a wig walking into a bathroom and watching a girl pee or listening to her pee, or I don't know what they're what they are afraid of. And then literally the Republican presidential candidate bragging on Howard Stern that he actually did that, that he actually walked into these dressing rooms and watched these women, these girls, really change their clothes and be naked and say like they were so beautiful and I just got to see them naked. Like, he said that out loud.
I mean, at the Miss Teen USA pageant, how many of these girls were underage? That's fucking
all of them. All of them.
That is a not only a I mean, we're not even talking about sexual assault. Now we're talking about pedophilia. And he admitted to it. Why in all hell is there not a prosecutor knocking on his door right now?
Right.
Well, the mainstream media still doesn't want to talk about the pending suit that a federal judge has decided can go forward.
Yeah, the 13-year-old
rape victim.
Has a witness.
Yeah.
Yep. Two witnesses now.
that's going witnesses. To a hearing in December.
December. Mm-hmm.
So if Trump wins, you're going to have
the president
of the United States
for raping a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Now, technically, the president is not allowed to be sued and prosecuted. That's actually a law. So
well, he could be impeached.
He cannot be compelled to go to court or be sued or be prosecuted for things. Well, he can be indicted. He can be impeached and things like that. But he can't actually be sued. And
I'm
this
not
is
sure
a civil case. It's a fact. This is a civil case, so he can't be sued. So,
I think that only qualifies for things that happen to him while he's not
while he's like president.
Yeah, it's the whole it's the thing that we brought over from England about you can't sue the king, where it's whatever laws he makes or whatever things he does in office, you cannot sue him for. Right. If he shoots somebody before or after he's in office, you can try him for murder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Because he didn't do those things as the president.
But don't you think he would use that and not go?
I think that he would, but the Supreme Court would be like, haha, good try.
Right. But beyond that. So, yes, like, and some of the mainstream media, not like, you know, the big boys, but some people are touching it now. We talked about it last weekend, like no one was talking about it. And this week I've seen it come up three or four times.
Yeah, but mostly under the radar.
Yeah, like the BuzzFeed covered it, and
I
like
you guys had it, Sarah. But you know, NBC, ABC, CBS, no, CNN, no.
Nobody's
MSNBC
talking
has alluded
about it.
To it a couple times. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. They certainly haven't run mm-hmm. a story on it,
right?
Right. Nobody wants to touch it. It's so explosive and it's so gross. But we're getting to that point now where it's becoming less and less implausible, isn't it?
I honestly think that the reason a lot of the people aren't talking about it isn't the defendant in that case or the petitioner in that case, isn't it a Jane Doe?
That's yes. part of it. That's true. So
Jane Doe, Tiffany Doe, and Joan
they
Doe.
They can't put her on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think unless you have a victim, a survivor that's willing to sit for Anderson Cooper, you know, like – then it's maybe not, maybe that's why they're not making it into a bigger deal than it is, because it just doesn't make good TV.
That could be, well, it is a, it here's is my a question, federal though. Rape case against a 13-year-old girl against the Republican nominee for president. There's no bigger story in the history of politics than that.
I agree. But my question to you as a journalist is this. Even if you can't interview her, and you can't get the scoop, right, on what actually happened. Isn't it news that a federal judge reviewed the case and said, yeah, there's enough here to go forward, and Donald Trump's going to have to come to court in December?
Yes.
Isn't that news?
But all we can do and all we have done is basically just publish the stories for this is the public information we have. This is what the judge said. This is what's moving forward. And that's all you got. Like there really is nothing because you don't know who the women are. And right. Trump is commenting on it.
Yeah, but why major networks aren't
doing
that
even.
Yeah.
They're not even doing that. So that's my question is like, isn't that news enough to report just that? Like we don't know the details. We don't know who these women are. We don't know if it's true. But a federal judge has XYZ, like that's news to me.
It absolutely is. And especially within the context of this conversation and especially within the context of the Miss Teen USA thing, like as people are talking about him walking into dressing rooms and we're talking about him looking at underage girls, commenting about Lindsay Lohan, commenting
right?
about the 10-year-old girl and the 13-year-old girl.
Talk about Lindsay Lohan when you're done. Yeah.
That needs to be part of the conversation.
Right.
He's actually being sued for raping an underage girl.
Well, I knew he said something gross about underage Paris Hilton. Did he also say something about Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah, I'm going to let you do this, Sarah. Do the thing.
Oh,
I got it from you, so go ahead.
It really is cringeworthy. And, I mean, Lindsay Lohan, I think at the time was just barely legal. She was 18 years old. And the way that he said something to the effect of, Howard Stern said, what do you think of Lindsay Lohan? He said something like, she's hot. And then Trump said something like, there's something there, right? And he talked about her freckles, how he likes her freckles. And he liked her. I think she was on the cover of a magazine at the time. And he said he liked the close up shot of her chest. And again, with the freckles, like I think he said freckles 3 or 4 times within the same sentence, the way he likes to repeat the same word over and over and over again, because he's like Rain Man or something. Mm-hmm. She, bless her heart. I mean, Lindsay Lohan has had some serious issues in her life, and she released the best statement.
Finish what they said. So then they went on to say, like, what is it about disturbed teenage girls with daddy issues essentially that makes them the best lay?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, and they were like, they had this entire conversation about how, like, yeah, disturbed girls, man, you don't want to date them for a long time, but they're really good in the sack. Disturbed teenage girls with daddy issues, like, that's a whole thing. It's really good in bed.
Whole Dane Cook Act or something?
I mean, this is the Republican candidate for president, and he didn't say it while he was running, but for fuck's sake.
I can't remember the word that he said. I think it was, like, damaged women. He said something about damaged women looking for love. Mm-hmm. The damaged women part thing really bothered me. I actually completely forgot about the daddy issues thing, but but the part about it being a damaged women issue really bothered me.
And how they all just look for love, and they're just basically a black hole of love, and they'll just suck you dry. Howard Stern described these women as like vampires that would like suck you dry of all the love and still want more. And then Trump was like, yeah, like you don't want to date them long term, but man, short term, there's nothing like it. I think that's a direct quote. And you're like, all right, I can't. I don't know what to.
And the Howard Stern show, I'm not defending it or going against it, but the Howard Stern show is what it is. It's raunchy, shtick, shock jock, whatever. But
right
now you're running for fucking president.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I said last week is still true. He could have always made the argument that he made those comments because it was Howard Stern and because Howard Stern is a shock jock and he would never make those comments otherwise. And then the tape came out and you went, oh no, you say that shit all the time.
And you mean it.
In every mixed company with a hot mic, without one, whether you knew it, like that's the way that Donald Trump operates in the world. It's not because he was on Howard Stern that he said these things. It's because he is Donald Trump that he said these things.
Well, let me ask you this, Sarah. Even the 12 women to date or to our that have come out and made these claims, I almost feel like there's still a tidal wave that's somehow being held back. Like there's tapes, there's videotapes, there's audio tapes that there's seriously sick, horrific, damaging stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And like that we really haven't seen all of even that yet, that this is just kid stuff right now compared to what's coming. Do you get the sense that that's happening too, or?
Oh yeah, totally. And I think what we were seeing a lot of the Trump surrogates talking about rap music, and honestly, like my boss made a comment where she was just like, "Why are they talking about rap music all of a sudden?" And we realized that it's probably because there's the release of Trump referring to an African American person by the N word. On The Apprentice.
Yeah, but until that comes out, that's not
because people
filter through.
People have said that exists, and my assumption is that his staff then went to him and said, "Did you say this?" And he was like, "Fuck yeah, I probably said this. I say that all the time." And they were like, "Shit, now we've got to start." So
that's a good call. I thought they were just talking about how rap guys were raunchy, as if he was running against 50 Cent or something.
Did you hear about the Miss Teen USA from Maryland that's black and her whole story?
No, go ahead.
Yes.
I know, because how do you remember fucking everything this week? All right, so Miss Teen USA from, I think it was 2010, from Maryland, won, and it was the first time any woman of color had won for decades. And she was told by one of Trump's people, like, he doesn't really like black people. So if he's rude to you, don't be offended. But if you're the right kind of black person, then he'll be nice to you.
Oh,
and she was like, oh my God, like he's supposed to be my boss and he doesn't like me already. Like, what am I supposed to do? And then she was attending the Miss Universe rehearsals. And there was a woman of color on stage, a black woman on stage. And she was just in the audience for the rehearsal. And he, while this black woman was on stage, turned around. So his back was facing the woman on stage and made a vomiting face at her. And then, like, turned back, like, as though, like, she sickened him. And so this woman, this Miss Teen USA, was, like, horrified. But apparently she was the right type of black woman. And so he, like, paraded her around. He'd never met her before, had had, like, no conversation with her. And all of his buddies were hanging around. And he was introducing her to them, saying, like, oh, she's so smart. She's so well-spoken. She's so well-spoken. Isn't she so smart?
Colin Powell.
Isn't she so smart? And this chick was like, and baby boy just met me. Like, he don't know me. Like, he has no idea if I'm smart or not, or if I'm anything. Like, yeah, that would be a bombshell.
In any other universe.
But I think it goes to that. Like,
you know, here's the thing, Sarah. If the N-word tape surfaced tomorrow, I don't think it would budge any of his supporters. I think it would make it tougher for some congressional Republicans to hold on for dear life at that point, maybe. But, like, here's the thing. Like, I've been watching the polls, of course, and they're looking good for Hillary, but they're not much different from after the first debate. Mm-hmm. They're really not. A point or two, maybe. Like, it's not peeling away his supporters. They just don't fucking care.
Yeah, they don't. And it's not just the N-word thing, too. You heard the Marley Madlin stuff came out.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking Joey Lucas, man.
Right? Do not fuck with this woman. Like,
how
no.
do you not love her?
I don't know.
And I mean, I can't imagine any human with any kind of empathy. But I think any person with any kind of disabilities.
Well, he really hates them, which is very scarily Nazi-like, right?
Yeah,
like he's got it in for people with disabilities.
For sure, because they are subhuman. It's very like reminiscent of like old German things, right? Like,
well, now he's going after the Jews, of course. The international banking cabal stuff is right out of the Elder Protocols of Zion, and like. You know, a lot of people don't quite get that. It's like us Jewish people know exactly what that's all about. And we hear the dog whistling loud and fucking clear. And it's going over most people's heads. It's not going over ours.
Yeah.
Ask me or Greg Dworkin or David Waldman or my dad if he would actually pay attention. You know, like, oh, yeah, we hear what you're saying, asshole. We get it. And like, this is real life. This is your real life Republican candidate for president is literally neo-Nazi dog whistling.
Mm-hmm.
And
walking
Bannon,
in on underage women getting dressed and bragging about it and groping people. And when I was talking about like the trauma, I feel like there is a serious thing about that. Like, it was fun in games, and then it was really disturbing, and it's been all those things for a long time, but, like, there is a trauma that's happening with this. Like, I feel tired and exhausted, and, like, I just don't know how much more I can take.
Well, here's the interesting question, right? What happens on the night of November 8th? Because we're assuming Trump will concede like a normal person, or we're assuming he won't. And the next day his supporters, I mean, 99.99% of them are all talk, like the lady, like, we're going to get our goods.
All right.
I mean,
as
like, they're not going to do jack shit, but just that 0.1% who might.
Well, and as a journalist, it's interesting to ask you, you know, his comments about, this election being rigged and the media being rigged for Hillary and this kind of like I'm going to lose. So I'm going to make it seem like I won, but.
Yeah, wouldn't you be scared to be in the press pen now? I mean, it's been ugly for the press, but now it's getting scary.
What do you think about all of that?
Yeah, that's really terrifying. And I mean, I'm lucky because I work from home and I live in this really simple, easy Washington, D.C. neighborhood where everybody is either press or some form of media or politics or nonprofit or whatever. So, you know, it's not like I'm really that terrified of some crazy person from West Virginia coming over to my house and open firing on my window.
Right. But in terms of the media, what do you,
I mean, but I've heard about, they had some reporters, I can't remember what it was on today, but they were talking about, maybe it was MSNBC, talking about how before the rallies begin, Trump supporters are really normal, friendly, decent people who will talk to the media about what they think or what's going on, or, you know, they'll sometimes maybe they'll make noise or, you know, wave and be silly while somebody's doing their stand up. But when Trump begins to speak, it's like he urges them to attack the media. And yeah, that's when things start getting a little bit weird. It's not before. These are not people who are coming into this rally being like, I'm gonna beat me up some journalists and, you know, whatever. I'm gonna take down some Anderson Cooper ass if I can tonight. they're completely polite, normal human beings. It's Trump inciting them that is causing the uproar. And
so what does it get crazy enough that at some point when he's just completely lost it and there's 800 women that have come out and like all the other GOP Republicans have jumped ship and Kellyanne Conway quits, that he just says, you know what, turn around and just, you know, go attack the press crew, go punch them in the face? Like are we going to get there in the next three, four weeks?
I doubt it. I mean, I want to believe that I honestly think that Trump is a bigger coward than that. I think this is kind of like that time whenever he went to the black church in Flint and the pastor was like,
it sat his ass down. Yeah.
I really don't think that he has the balls to do a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, but when he was at the black church, he was not surrounded by his sycophants. He wasn't feeding off the frenzy, you know?
That's a fair point. I mean, he is surrounded by his people, but he's also in front of all of these TVs and these TV cameras. And I can't imagine that he would think that that would make good television.
I guess my question is different than that, which is if and when he loses. He's been making this narrative for weeks now about how it's been rigged and he didn't really lose and it's the media's fault and they're all on Clinton's side and it's the media and Hillary and that's why he
and
lost. My question is, like, what does that look like? Even if he's gone, right? Like, he loses, he concedes. What are his, are there riots with his supporters? Like, what does that look like if they have been really, like, believe that it was rigged and that it was stolen from them? And there's a woman, a liberal woman now, and we already had a black guy, and now there's a liberal woman, and the election was rigged, and he really won, but she stole it. There's going to be an uprising, I think.
I don't think that there'll be an uprising simply because I don't think people are, I don't think they're ballsy enough. I think they're probably more lazy. I think too, they're also more dispersed. I think if everybody lived in like one apartment building and they were all Trump fans and they're all like ready to rise up, it would be a different thing. I do think that there will be a segment of the population that gets sketchy and that, it gets crazy and gets violent, and probably you will see people, I think you'll see the FBI step in on some people's houses.
Well, here's another thing,
yeah,
Sarah.
Domestic terror things.
We like to hear.
And what happened tonight in Kansas with the FBI arresting.
What happened in Kansas?
So there was a plot to set off a bomb in, I think, an apartment complex that
with
has
Somali
a bunch of
people, yeah,
Somali immigrants.
Oh, my God.
I think it was in Wichita. Am I right?
Jesus.
Don't remember.
And they thwarted it because fucking FBI knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're really damn good at it. Thank God. So they thwarted this bomb attack, and I'm going to guess that the FBI knows who a majority of these people are.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the, I guess, the good side of the Patriot Act, maybe.
Like, they're monitoring these domestic terrorists who will probably become more and more active, you're saying, after Trump loses.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, is because Trump has has enabled a lot of these people and allowed for these people to come out of the woodwork and be more public and be more active on the internet.
Yeah.
I think it's also given the FBI an excellent opportunity to be like, hey, look, our lists are growing by leaps and bounds, and we've got a lot of information about you people.
Right.
And we know who all of you fuckers are because you're not hiding in your holes anymore.
Right. That's a good point. If we want to look for a silver lining, that's a good point. Yeah.
Do we want to get into the WikiLeaks stuff at all? Because I've been reading it out of curiosity. And, you know, I mean, this may sound partisan, but it's really boring stuff.
I was going to say, I haven't read the second batch, the stuff that came out today. The first batch of things I read through and was like, there's nothing here. Why is this a big deal?
It's not. And the way that the Trumpkins react to what they think is scandalous is literally like if you work in politics and use email.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And that's like less scandalous than some other shit that is in emails between staffers.
Oh yeah.
Of politicians. Yeah. Like that's like less. I know firsthand that like that is less scandalous than
way
some shit that is
scandalous.
Way less scandalous than some shit that is said between staffers via email. It amazes me that these people are like, they were talking about what was the best message to talk about with this and that and how it would be publicly viewed. That is, and I'm like,
oh, and we're worried
that's
about
fucking politics. What?
We're worried,
what?
We're worried that Sanders is raising more money from this group that we should be raising more money from. How scandalous. It's like, are you fucking serious?
What is she going to sound like when she says it this way? Maybe we should say it that way. Oh, she doesn't even know what her politics. No,
then, and then there's
no
screaming Twitter headline. See how corrupt it is. She's lying.
Like, the New York Times is going to publish a story, so they reached out to her campaign for comment. Oh my god, the New York Times alerted them of a story. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
That,
it's
like
crazy
that's
town.
Exactly what they do with every story. David Farenthold goes on and says, before I ran this horrible damaging story on Trump, I called the Trump campaign and asked for comment.
I told them exactly what I was going to write and asked them if they wanted to say anything about it, and they said no.
Oh, I guess David Farenthold is in cahoots with the Trump campaign.
I guess so. He told them
take
about the story.
Take away his Pulitzer.
Oh, my
stop
God.
Stop the presses.
Literally.
It's just, it's like, it's, they just
they're
people.
They're so stupid.
I don't understand how they, it's politics.
No, but seriously, though, I've read through most of them, and I've read, like, what gets the screaming headlines as being the most, quote, damning, and like it is beyond nothing.
Yeah,
it's beyond nothing.
How do you feel about it, Sarah?
I mean, there's the fake ones from, like, you know, Ruski.com where Saul Alinsky or whoever says, oh, we got busted for Benghazi.
Oh,
we did Benghazi, we shouldn't have done Benghazi. That we should be punished.
Hillary said we should have done it, and then we did, and then now she's in trouble. But don't worry, like, come on.
Also, again, great leader, glorious Vladimir Putin is great, great leader. Signed. What's the guy's name that the Republicans are always invoking? This was to scare everybody because he's Jewish.
Yeah.
I keep saying Saul Alinsky, but not.
No, it's the other guy.
George Soros?
No,
the guy that Hillary Clinton is so associated with that they are obsessed with the emails. He sent her basically annoying emails, and she was like, ha ha, thanks.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, I'll look into it, thanks.
No. Oh, my God, I know his name. Like,
Stu something?
No, don't say
Stu,
names.
Stu, Jewish name something?
Don't say names. I'll get it. Hold on.
We're going to feel like idiots for,
anyway,
for remembering this guy's
Sarah,
name.
Sarah, continue, and I'll get his name in a minute.
Shit, now I can't remember what I was going to say. Because now I'm trying to think of his name.
I know, right?
Son of a bitch.
God damn it.
I would also, this brings me back to the whole creating a fake Twitter account just to put out fake information to troll the Trump supporters.
Yes.
How fun would it be to create a bunch of fake WikiLeaks things where it's like, Hillary Clinton sent letters to Hitler or
Stalin, I mean, like, Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Like, complete. I mean, the funny thing about Hitler is it's like completely implausible things because it's not even, the timeline doesn't even work. Like, she wasn't even born yet.
Right. Well, that's like,
well,
the people that were pissed,
like,
off
that,
at,
right?
Pissed off at Barack Obama because he wasn't in the White House. He was out golfing on 9/11. And you're,
right,
like,
yeah, like, why didn't,
no,
he
know? No, he wasn't president then. He wasn't even a senator then. Yeah. So, no.
Or when Giuliani says Hillary Clinton never showed up after 9/11. And there's, yeah, pictures, there's literally pictures with them walking next to each other. Oh, God, is he the worst? And then Chris Christie is going to get indicted, it seems like. I mean, this we can't keep up with it all.
We could literally do like a 4-hour podcast and still not be caught up. But let's make sure we didn't miss anything.
We got about
15 crucial.
Minutes. So.
Okay, there is one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Sarah, which is the wives and daughters thing.
God help us.
Yeah. So this whole sex thing came out with Donald Trump, whatever version of it you want to talk about. And everyone who denounced it, and that is including Democrats, some, but mostly Republicans, also pundits, people that just, everyone who came out against it, all these men, came out and said, I have a wife, or mm-hmm. I have two daughters, or whatever, right? I have a mm-hmm. wife, or I have daughters, or I have both. Therefore, these comments are very disturbing to me. Is it necessary for men to have a wife or a daughter? Or is it necessary for women to have a relation to a man in order for them to not be, for it to be deemed inappropriate for them to be sexually abused? Because that's how it seems.
Fuck no, motherfucker.
Right.
And I think, I can't remember what comedian it was. I think it was maybe Seth Meyers said something like 100% of men have a woman in their life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they all come from women, you dumb shits.
We shat you out of our vaginas already, okay?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with my humanity. My relation to men has nothing to do with why you shouldn't fucking rape me.
And so I'm of two minds on this. One, you should not feel this way because you have a wife or a daughter and you can look at them and be like, shit, if some, you know, fat ass old 70-year-old motherfucker said this about my daughter, I would feel skeezy and want to punch him in the mangina. Mm-hmm. But you should be a human and just be like, this is not how you treat other humans. Mm-hmm. I honestly would say you shouldn't treat anybody, human or animal, this way. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, I saw Jack Kingston on TV today, who was pulling the whole, who made some comment about how, I think he said he actually has a daughter, and he was excusing all of this Trump bullshit. And at the same time, I was like, motherfucker, you have a daughter.
Right.
You know?
So does my dad. You know, right? My dad is going to vote for Trump, and I am his daughter, and he has a wife who is my mom. And when I asked him about it, he got really defensive and said, Clinton's worse and all the things, emails, Benghazi, WikiLeaks is the best. Like, and I was like, no, I would like you to address the things that he said about women. And he was like, distraction. Like, there's like, yeah, there's like an airlock there that like we're never getting past. Like,
well,
they're never going to get it. But my point is, like,
layer, right?
Why is it that you only think rape is bad if you look at your daughter and go, mm-hmm. oh, shit.
You know, it's not that, because I have neither a wife nor daughter.
Yeah.
And I think I know.
But you also evolved.
Yes.
Well, yeah. But I think the point is that is almost like a bigger indictment that like you look at Joe, average old white guy, Republican guy who's going to vote for Trump, and you say, hey, man, you have a wife and a daughter. What the fuck? And I think it's not that these men step up and say, well, I have a wife and a daughter, therefore I can't vote for Trump. It's like, I think that's more us sort of trying to shame them. And it's just sort of an extra layer of. Mm.
So it's, you think it's like right Republicans code switching and sort of dog whistling to each other about like,
or making excuses like,
you have a daughter, you have a wife, I do, you do too, why would you allow him to speak this way?
Right. Or it's cover for themselves. Like if their peers are all for Trump, like, I can't support him, I have a wife and daughter.
But do you understand how dehumanizing it is?
Absolutely.
For me as a woman?
Absolutely. It's ridiculous.
Like, I don't
it's
need
it's dehumanizing
you
for men too.
It is. I don't need anyone to have a wife or a daughter for them to think that if I get raped, it's bad.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You could be an orphan bachelor. You could be Bill Maher if he was an orphan and still think it was bad if I got raped.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm a human being and that shouldn't happen to human beings.
Right.
right? That's the dehumanizing part. Go ahead.
Presumably, Sarah. Presumably, we would like to believe that we have reached that level of humanity.
Obviously, we have not, but
that is what I strive to. That is what I hope that we reach in my lifetime, is a point at which we can honestly look at each other and be like, I respect you because you are a person.
Right.
You know, they're talking about post-election, this is going to be a very divided country. And I think it's almost like it's deeper than that. I think it's like a civil war.
I agree. Like, that's what I've been saying.
It's a generational thing in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of us are looking at our parents and being like, you actually supported that guy? And I think in 2 or 3 years, they're just not going to want to talk about it. I think they're going to be embarrassed about it. But, like, this is going to be very, very difficult because we're going to think about everything that happened in the cycle and everything that was said. And after Trump has not been elected president, he's going to go on trial for raping a 13-year-old girl, and for Trump U, and for this lawsuit, and that lawsuit, and 800,000 more women are going to come forward, and God knows what the hell else is in his closet.
Yep.
And
Trump Foundation and the IRS is probably going to investigate some more shit. And
Russia, and what are those connections? The FBI might be knocking on his door. I mean, like,
and while all of this is going on, he's losing a fuck ton of money because what he's saying and what he's doing is causing fewer and fewer people to stay in his hotels.
Well,
to
you would think, but I think that Bannon and Ailes and Trump are going to start the Trump Nazi news network or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But if not that, we have to look at our parents now and be like, what the fuck, mom and dad? That's what you wanted for us?
Well, that is a conversation that I'm currently not willing to have. Like, my parents and I talk about politics and we disagree fundamentally on everything, but we talk respectfully and we talk openly and we are like, I love my folks, but there comes a time during election season where we are no longer able to speak. And it's that time of like, we're no longer speaking the same language. Everyone's in hysteria mode and no one believes anyone. And everything's a conspiracy. And like, it's just meltdown time. So I usually call my parents and say, like, I love you very much and I'm not going to speak to you about politics until about a month after around Thanksgiving we'll talk. But like, I'm not talking to you until then because and this one's been particularly hard because of the shit that's come up and of the shit that's been said. And, you know, my soon to be sister-in-law, I say that Josh would kill me, but it's true. is a Mexican immigrant,
right?
And there are lots of women in my family and we have maybe potentially gender nonconforming kids and all kinds of things that like this election has brought up a lot of that like I don't know how to talk to them right now. Like, I don't know how to do that right now.
Well, how does anybody do it, I guess, is my question. Like, you know, this is gonna create a rift among families,
make
among
a rift bigger.
The generation.
Yeah.
Like it's collectively, we're looking, and of course our good friends, you know, Greg and Arliss, and they're on our side, but you know,
yeah.
you look at the crosstabs with the ages and we're looking at these folks who we're going to be taken care of because they're living on the Social Security and Medicare and everything else that they want to gut. And we're like, this is what you wanted for us? Like, how do we even find common ground? Like, how do we trust each other?
I don't know. Go ahead, Sarah.
I want to give you a point of hope and something incredibly positive. I talk about my Republican parents and my Republican family, and I went home for 4th of July and went to this crazy Pentecostal church with the family while we were visiting my stepbrother in rehab, and we were standing in the parking lot and my stepdad's father, who is a rancher in Wynnewood, Oklahoma, comes up to me, puts his arm around me, and he goes, "Well, Sarah, I think I'm gonna have to vote for Hillary Clinton."
Whoa, really?
And both of my parents are going to support Hillary Clinton after both of them voted for George W. Bush twice. And I'm pretty sure they also voted for McCain. They both loved Sarah Palin, bought her book.
Remember when we thought she was terrible?
Right?
How quaint. She seems so
Or George W. Bush. God, I'd take him a million times over Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
But no, that's an amazing story, though. Like, that's amazing.
And my mother, who, I mean, from the very, very beginning of Trump's candidacy, well before he was named the nominee, my mother was like, fuck that guy. And that is not, like, my mother does not say that about Republicans. And she has just been disgusted. And I watched her not like Hillary Clinton at all, like really, really not like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Slowly kind of become this person who is more and more okay with Hillary Clinton because of just how vile Trump is.
Well, right? Yeah, there is
that's
the
amazing.
There is the never Trump wing of the conservative movement. They're smaller than people think, but then you got to remember, if it was Ted Cruz, they'd be all in for Ted Cruz.
But these are not political people. These are people who are not really that conscious of politics. Maybe my parents are a little bit more, just because of what I do and because I'm constantly like sharing an obscene amount of information on my Facebook. And at the end of the night, they sit down and watch Dancing with the Stars and they get on Facebook and post pictures and comment on fucking everything. Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, in my stepdad's family, I know that his mother and his stepfather are hardcore Trump supporters. And when they talked about that at Christmas dinner, the whole family just kind of got really, really quiet and uncomfortable. And these are all Republicans. And wow. And I honestly, that gives me a lot of hope. Like, these are people who get drunk and talk about how much they hate Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So that gives me a little bit of hope that there's some sense of
decency,
rationality. I don't know.
I know. But like, you know, I love my parents, but they are definitely voting. They went to a Trump rally.
Oh, God help us.
Yeah. It's not even like, oh, I'll hold my nose and vote for him. My mother, the sweet light and joy of life. She's literally like just a little bundle of joy and love. Texted a group text to me and my brothers and our spouses this fucking text of them being at a Trump rally, and every single one of us was like, are you fucking kidding me right
now?
Well,
here's a question, Rachel, that I want to ask you, because there was the Trump rally of 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there's a Trump rally like tonight where he's saying, I couldn't have sexually assaulted these women because they're too ugly.
They're ugly.
And I walked in front of Hillary Clinton and I wasn't impressed. And like, would your mother react to that and laugh or
no?
Like, that's what I'm trying to understand at this
point. No, she would not. She would laugh uncomfortably and feel very bad for the woman.
And then I would
ask her about it.
And say, this is terrible?
Yes.
But she's not doing that.
No. I don't know how to talk to my mom about this. She's just, I don't understand how. And it's becoming that dividing thing that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I can talk to I love my fucking parents. I love my parents. And I don't know how to talk to them in a reasonable way about this because it is so divisive. Because they don't understand how I can vote for this crook and this liar and how I don't see that the media is rigging everything and how I don't see
that
I'm being deceived.
Well, that was my point about Clinton derangement syndrome.
And then I don't understand how my mother can vote for this man who has said and done these things. So we're at that classic impasse, but it's way worse.
Well, that's
and
my point.
I don't think I can talk to them.
I think this situation is happening all over the country with millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
And it's going to take time to heal, especially because as soon as Hillary's elected, they're going to try to impeach her and everything's going to be a scandal. And I mean, it's never going to stop.
Oh yeah.
It's going to be, I think, honestly, it's also going to change the way that millennials and Gen Z think about government, because we've seen this kind of constant attack on the president go on all through the Obama presidency.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to happen all through the Clinton presidency, too.
Oh, for sure.
And I think what that will do is cement the coffin of the GOP.
I think too.
Yeah. It's not just the sexism. It's not just the homophobia and the xenophobia and all of these things that that Trump is sort of pushing the Republican Party to. I think Bill Maher said that the GOP tonight, he said the GOP now stands for grab our pussies.
Nice. That's amazing. That's amazing. But
how did nobody think of that before?
God, right?
He's got the mind for it.
He does. Yeah. He does.
But now, I mean, you're going to see, it's going to be even more and more obvious that the reason that government isn't functioning is because of Congress wasting so much time and energy fighting the White House instead of doing the work of the people. And I think once we get to the point where, you know, redistricting happens and the demographic shift forces more Democratic districts, I think it's just going to completely destroy the Republican Party.
As long as we continue to get out and vote.
Well, we can hope so, but we got to, you know, midterms could be a bloodbath. We're defending a ton of seats in 2018.
True. Yep.
And we show up for friggin' midterms.
Which we don't.
So, I mean, hopefully with some new leadership in the DNC, we can.
Yeah.
And hopefully these fucking tide. Bernie bastards decide to, like, actually engage in the political process outside of the primary system and, like, go do things. And that would be really helpful.
Yeah, and not just elect a bunch of no-name greens and then throw their hands
up. During the primaries, go help people run for office and win.
That's about going to do it for us.
Oh, I have one more thing.
Okay.
One more?
One more. Squeeze it in.
I can't not talk about Michelle Obama's speech.
Oh,
right. Let's end on a high note, right? Like,
maybe
the greatest speech that's ever been given in my lifetime.
When I've heard her speak a bunch of different times, mm-hmm. I feel like we've all seen her speak from the heart. This was maybe the first time I got a little misty eyed, and I really like when it was over, I wanted so badly to hug her and just thank her.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
I feel like I've been in politics so long. I don't have those feelings about politicians anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't give a shit. I don't put you on a pedestal. I think you're all probably crazy. But
she's not exactly a politician.
True. But most first ladies, I'm like, you're married to somebody who is the president and everybody's all fucking crazy.
Right.
But no, this wasn't it just like, everything.
I love her. She's great. I've always thought she was amazing, but I just really, really loved her for this. I was so grateful.
Oh my God. And her shaky voice and her clutching and her like, this was not like some planned political thing.
You can't.
She was just fucking pissed and upset and just viscerally affected by it. And I want to read something before we're done that I think was what I was trying to say. It comes from Dan Rather, and he was talking about this speech, and here's what he said. Almost every campaign stump speech ever made is usually forgotten even before it is finished. Today I sense something happened that will echo throughout history. First Lady Michelle Obama took the podium in New Hampshire with a message so visceral, so emotional, and so powerful that it will stand as a moment of clarity in an election full of such moral muddiness. Obama's theme was not about policy or even politics. It was about shining the spotlight of justice on the looming specter of Donald Trump, a name she never mentioned, and his long history of misogyny, sexism, bragging of sexual assault, and now the litany of allegations. We've never had a first lady like Michelle Obama, in spirit or biography. An African-American woman of such accomplishment speaking with a quivering voice of how women have been treated as property and its effect on our nation's character held the crowd in the hall and, I believe, millions more at home in rapt attention. It should be noted that the legacy of slavery, under which we still struggle, included the added burden of institutionalized sexual violence. To have the African-American wife of the first African-American president bear witness to potentially the first woman president added to the significance of this moment. To speak of Michelle Obama's own political skills, as potent as they are, would be to diminish the import of today's events. I share the video in full because all citizens of the United States may be interested in hearing the message firsthand. Regardless if you agree or disagree with what the First Lady has to say, I believe you cannot deny that this speech marks a singular chapter in our national history. In many ways, it serves as a bookend to her husband's famous speech on race in his campaign 8 years ago. Right?
I'm Stan Rather.
And on that note, we'll have to say goodbye. Sarah, I don't know if you'll be able to join us again, before election night. We'll definitely talk after that, if nothing else. But thanks again so much.
But you're my favorite.
You are amazing.
You guys are my favorite. Oh, my God.
Thanks for talking about lady stuff and sexism. And thanks,
anytime,
everybody, for listening. And I hope it wasn't too much of a downer.
Please find Sarah on Twitter, at Sarah Burris. Find all our awesome stories on Raw Story. And I've noticed that all our Daily Coast type people are following you and retweeting you a lot. So I hope that has something to do with us. But if not, who cares? I'm just glad
still
people
go
are
do it.
You.
She's amazing.
Bless them for it.
Yeah. So that's it for us, everybody. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and try not to strangle your parents over this Trump fiasco. Thanks and good night. I'm feeling kind of numb, feeling kind of dumb, thinking of you only. I'm feeling kind of low, feeling kind of slow, thinking that you own me. Melt my metal bones in the fire inside of you. Mend my broken heart back, broke because of you. Melt my metal bones in the fire inside of you. Mend my broken heart back.